Hey, welcome to the DIY Garage, the podcast for do-it-yourself automotive enthusiasts. I'm Brian Joslin, coming to you from inside the Eastwood Garage in Pottstown, Pennsylvania. Hanging out with me today is our friend Chris Baker, who was passing through and wanted to stop in for a visit. Chris publishes two magazines for Chevy and GM enthusiasts, GM Scene and CK Magazine. He also produces three event series, the C10 Nationals, the Bowtie Nationals, and Truck Scene. Before we get going, just a reminder that you can catch DIY Garage on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon, and other popular podcast services. And of course, video episodes are always on Eastwood's YouTube channel. Or go to eastwood.com/garage and click on the podcast tab. Regardless of how you watch or listen, give us a like and subscribe to the show. We appreciate it. So, Chris,
welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here.
I guess just before we start rolling, we were talking about the fact that we're in Pottstown, not Pottsville. You had a little bit of a... That's not the first person... You're not the first person to have that happen. So Pottsville is, I don't know, 45 minutes away and better known for Yuengling beer. So that's not an uncommon departure for people to maybe make that trip. So
I didn't think there was two towns in Pennsylvania that started with pots.
Yeah, so. Well, we're full of pots around here. Yeah. I don't know what to say. Yeah. So welcome here. Anyway, it's great to have you here. You drove in from Ohio, right?
That's correct.
Out here and doing some exploring. So thanks for coming in. We had some weather that we weren't sure how this was all going to work out. One of the last snowstorms, hopefully, of the season. But glad you were able to make it. And I understand you may run into some going back. So
That's probably the country we live in, right?
Good luck with that. Yeah. And you're going back to Ohio, right?
Yes.
You're a native of Ohio?
Yep. I grew up in Michigan, but live in Ohio.
Okay. Yeah. Some Midwestern guy.
Well, we don't tell the people in Ohio that I grew up in Michigan. There's kind of a little bit of a rivalry there.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. So we're going to talk magazines and car shows because that's what you do. But first, I kind of want to talk about everything you do is very General Motors centric. So Chevy, GM pickups. Give me a little background on your connection with GM cars, trucks, and your history with those.
Well, growing up in Michigan, there was a lot of GM plants there. So that was kind of early on, I think probably subconsciously was implanted in my brain. When I got out of school, I'm actually just a guy that went to art school.
Okay.
And when I got out of school, I got in the automotive field at a place in Michigan called Motor State.
Okay.
And worked for them for a couple of years and then went to JEGS.
Doing what kind of work at Motor State? What was
I was in their advertising department.
Okay.
So I think I produced their first drag race catalog that they had.
Wow.
And that they still have. And then when I went to JEGS, did a lot of their catalog work and their ad work and a lot of other stuff for them.
Got it. Did you grow up in GM cars? I came out of a GM family. My dad was diehard General Motors.
General Motors in my family, too.
Yeah. We had one Ford Maverick when I was 2 years old, and it was the last Ford we ever had in the house. It was all General Motors after that.
So I've owned usually a Chevy most of the time growing up, and then recently I bought a GMC. So, but still in the family.
Yeah, more than just in the family, right?
Right.
What was your first car? What was the very first thing you ever had?
83 Tercel hatchback.
Nothing wrong with that.
It was a hand me down from like grandparent, aunt, mom, and then me.
Yeah.
But I beat that thing up. I don't know if any other car could have taken the beating I gave it.
I was going to say, it probably never left you stranded, did it?
No, it didn't. But I learned how to change oil. I learned how to do maintenance on that car and learned how to get rid of the miles on the tires on that car, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Now, I know what you rolled in here in a Honda Element. We were chatting about that a little bit. Do you have project cars at home? Anything GM that you're working through or have built?
I have a 66 Sedan DeVille.
Okay.
I'm the second owner. I bought it from the original owner's daughter after he passed. The cars had the motor and trans redone.
Okay.
And the body on it's great. It came actually from Pennsylvania somewhere.
Wow. Must have been in a barn if it's still on
the
road.
It must have been a Sunday cruiser for somebody. And then I have a 50 GMC pickup that is currently in paint, and it's been in my family since 60.
Wow.
So I inherited it. Nobody wanted it. You know, it wouldn't do over 40. Had to put lead in the gas. It didn't stop.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a really nice build when we're done, all new chassis and brakes and all that good stuff. Small block with TKX and fuel injection. And just because I thought it kind of fit the truck a little more.
Yeah.
And then kind of my truck, I'll say, but mostly for my daughter. I've got three daughters, but okay. My middle daughter is kind of a wild child. And so we're building her a 95 Chevy autocross truck.
Nice.
So
short bed.
Short bed.
Yeah.
Yep. So funny story about that truck was it was a giveaway truck. I used to give away vehicles at my events. And the guys that won it, it was in Nashville 2 years ago. They were Canadian.
Okay.
And they were crying and excited, the typical reaction. And then he finally looked at me and he goes, I can't get this back across the border. The tariff on it would be crazy.
Right.
So I said, well, let's work a deal. So he went home
bought
and
him out of it.
Now he has a remodeled bathroom and kitchen, and okay. I have a truck. So that's how that worked out.
The Cadillac sounds like it's a pretty original car.
Very original. And it's a really nice cruiser.
Yeah. And the 1950s, obviously a custom project. Yes. What are you doing paint-wise, colors? And
so, you know, those trucks a lot of times they were red and black. Mm-hmm. Guys would switch them over. So this was that way when I got it. My uncle originally owned it, and then he passed away and when I was a teenager. It sat in my parents' yard for a while. I grew up in a place where all your aunts and uncles lived across the street from each other. Yeah. That's my grandparents owned the property. And my other uncle bought it, made it a parade vehicle.
Okay.
So it had a mild restoration done in the early 90s, and he had it repainted red and black. It was originally all black. So now what I'm going to do is the truck will have – it'll be gloss black. The fenders, front and rear, will be a matte black.
Wow.
That's kind of my nod to the red and black paint scheme.
Okay.
And then another nod to the paint scheme and kind of the era is the entire interior of the truck will be a candy red with a heavy flake.
Wow.
To kind of have that 50s feel to it.
Nice.
So it's going to be a little bit unique. And then...
So the red pops all on the inside.
Red pops on the inside, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Red Wilwood calipers, too. Yeah. But
same red? Same...
Very close red.
Very close?
Yeah.
The autocross truck is interesting. So has she autocrossed yet? Is that something you've done together with her?
No. Or? So my kids all work at my events.
Okay.
And she was supposed to be doing security, keeping people out of where their trucks were coming in and out of.
Okay.
We don't want people walking in and out of there.
Sure.
And my business partner, Ken, was down there, and he called me on the radio, and he goes, hey, your daughter, she's not here, but the golf cart's here. So I went over, and we do ride-alongs at my events. And so with B.F. Goodrich and Brian Finch, we do ride-alongs, and she was doing a ride-along. And the driver said, oh, this is her eighth time. At the time, she was 14.
Okay.
And so I went over and I said, Miley, you got to get out of the truck. You've got a job to do. And if you're that interested, we'll just build you one.
Okay.
So it's an LS manual.
She have her license yet?
Yeah, she's been driving for a year or so.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, accident free.
That's good.
That's good.
So what are you doing with that? I imagine a lot of suspension set up for autocross.
A lot of suspension. So Arnie Gonzalez out of Tennessee, he owns a company called OBS Chevy Racing.
Okay.
So he's going to put some of his stuff on there on the suspension side of it. We've got Bear Brakes, I think, on there. And then Davo over in Tennessee is going to paint it for me.
Okay.
So we're going to – she wants black, kind of family theme.
Sure.
Most of the vehicles I own are. And she wants like a – it's kind of like a pink orange. I don't remember the exact color what it was called. It's specific to her. It's what she wants to highlight some of it. So.
Okay. Is it going to be a drive and drive, or is it something you have to trailer in?
It will probably be trailered most of the time, but it's also something that I'll probably take her for some spins. Yeah. We have a lot of roundabouts in Columbus.
Okay.
So hashtag roundabout bandit.
Okay.
Maybe with that thing.
All right. Check that out.
Yeah.
I'm going to get into magazines. You're producing two real live print magazines in 2025. Let's talk about that a little bit. We were talking earlier, you've got kind of a younger audience. You skew to a younger audience a little bit. How do the magazines play into their interest with, in the age of Instagram and TikToks and everything else going on?
I grew up with magazines. I'm still old enough or young enough, however you want to look at it, to remember magazines.
Yeah.
And the world I came from at Jegs, and once since I've left Jegs, magazines were still an important part of our industry, the automotive industry. They're hard to track sales from, obviously.
Absolutely.
Unlike all other digital stuff. But the demographic that I'm kind of have found as my sweet spot is that, let's say, 35 to 55, 35 to 65 area. And we still remember magazines. I had BMX magazines. Mm-hmm. And maybe some guys had, you know, liquid-cooled Volkswagen magazines or even Hot Rod magazine.
Right.
So there's still that connection, I think, with my audience. It's kind of a nostalgia piece. So those two magazines, they still have the center fold out.
Okay.
It's not what you think it is. It's a vehicle. But we still have the center fold. It comes out. It pulls out. So it's a poster. That's in every issue. So we're just trying to have that reconnect.
And they're big books. What are they, 140 pages?
They're 138 pages, okay. Which at that paperweight is as big as you can get and still staple stitch it.
Right.
And, you know, when Scott and I started this, CK Truck came first.
How long ago was that?
It was during COVID.
Okay, so 5 years, last five years or so.
Scott and I worked at Jegs together.
Okay.
And he left, and we didn't see each other for like 20 years. And I was actually at a Volkswagen show, and we saw each other. And this would have been in late summer of 19. And he was creative director at the time for Mac Tools, or whatever you want to call it. And yeah. So he got a severance. They were kind of downsizing, and he came to me, and he goes, "Hey, I know we just reconnected, but you got a lot of cool stuff going on." And I had just come from SEMA, and I had heard that they were shuttering a bunch of books. I said, "I want to start a book."
Yeah.
Which may be a crazy way of looking at that, right? Because they just closed a bunch of them, and I want to open one.
Sure.
So it was a perfect time because he had a little bit of money coming in from where he was at. Plus, he had COVID, so there wasn't a whole lot going on. So it gave us that opportunity to start it. But every inch of this book was well thought out as far as even the page count. And yes, you could perfect bind it. Perfect bind it's where it has that hard cover.
Right.
But a stapled book lays really well.
It does. It opens up.
And with our books, with the photography in it.
You can't really do a centerfold in.
It's hard to do, right. Yeah. It doesn't, the message doesn't come, the look doesn't come across very well when you perfect bind. It's hard to hold that book open. So on a stapled book, it lays really well, and yeah, it's cheaper to produce, but we did it because it lays well.
Yeah.
Every detail in this book, Scott and I have a lot of thought into it.
And how long after that did you launch the second title then?
GM Scene came last year.
Okay.
GM Scene is going to go bi-monthly.
Okay.
I think we're going to have more success with it bi-monthly. But CK is still monthly.
Okay. That's a heavy load from a work standpoint these days, especially.
It's a lot. It's a lot. And Scott and I are both creative people,
mm-hmm.
and he does a killer job giving it that look that you go, wow, this thing pops.
Yeah.
He's good at that.
I was browsing through the couple issues you brought along with you, and it's all color. It's gorgeous. Pages filled with pictures and What do you think you guys are doing that the old magazines didn't get quite right? Either from a business standpoint or from just a creative standpoint.
A couple things. Instagram and print.
So understanding social media.
So people don't want to read.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even want to read. So we kind of hit the basics, and we'll cover an event or we'll cover a car, and we kind of give you a little bit of the story of the car, enough. And then we'll give you the breakdown of what's in the car, let's say.
Yeah.
And then we leave it at that. We let the pictures kind of speak, do the speaking. That's in the world we live in. Everything is swipe and up and down, left and right. And so it's a short attention span, and having the nice photography in there is the way to do it.
Yeah.
I think the other thing is keeping in it quality book. You know, there's books out there that don't have the nice paper. You've got to have a quality book. It's less money that I go home with.
Yeah.
But I think it's why we're still in business.
Yeah.
And I think the other part of it is partnering with other truck shows. Yes, I have my own events too, but partnering with other truck shows and being involved, not only covering those events, but also I'll ship, you know, if they're going to have 1,000 trucks there, I'll ship them 1,000 books. And then everybody that comes gets one of those books in their hand.
Yeah.
Which as advertisers, that's what they want. They want to be in that customer's hand. You know, yes, we're on, I think, 1,600 newsstands now nationwide.
Okay.
But also, we want to be directly in the consumer's hand.
Nice. From the business side of things, is it tougher to find advertisers these days, or sponsors and partners to work with running a magazine than running a social media channel or being a YouTube influencer?
I think we had to kind of prove ourselves.
Yeah.
the first year or two, we had advertisers. I have advertisers and sponsors that are pretty loyal to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, great connections, obviously, being at Jags, I would imagine.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of close connections I maybe knew, but didn't know them well enough. It's taken me the 10 or 11 years since I left Jags to build a lot of those relationships, mm-hmm. That they trust me. But to get advertisers now, I think now that we have a little bit of traction, and then plus with the GM trucks being kind of a hot market,
right?
You know, we are kicking butt on newsstands. You know, Barnes & Noble, for example, has 5,500 magazine titles that they sell. We are in the top 5% of that.
Wow.
And no other truck magazine is even close. And I think it's because of the quality of the book and what and the pictures that we have. So it's working for advertisers because we get more and more every year. I think I've had 3 drop out of the book in 5 years.
Okay.
And they were smaller guys that gave it a try.
Sure.
And I also know that in today's world, you can do pay-per-click, you can do social media, you can do Facebook advertising or Instagram advertising and see the results. So we're a small operation. We have low overhead. It keeps my ad rates low.
Yeah.
We keep an eye on that. You just can't charge the amount of money that the old magazines used to charge. Because yeah. I understand.
They charged a lot.
You could spend crazy money.
Were expensive, yeah.
Yeah.
You ever ask someone if they'd rather have their car featured in a magazine or on the website?
I say that.
And it comes back to paper always.
Paper.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, it's Thanksgiving.
Right.
The family's over.
Right.
You know, everybody knows you got that hot 67 truck out in the garage. You're like, hey, did you know that I had pictures of my truck taken? Okay, let me see them.
Yeah.
Now, if they show you their phone, yeah, everybody has pictures of everything on their phone.
Exactly.
It's not that exciting. But if you can pull out a magazine and go, whoa, yeah. Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, digital's ubiquitous these days. I mean, you're absolutely right. You know, pictures of your own car on your phone are not a unique thing. But to achieve... you know, notoriety in print is permanent. You don't ever have to find where that link went to. And it really does resonate as a, you know, another echelon of recognition, I think.
We still see grown men and women get giddy when you say, hey, we would like to shoot your truck for the magazine.
Yeah. On a smaller scale here, I mean, we do our annual calendar and it's the same thing. You know, they want copies of the calendar to share with their friends.
Sure.
And that tangible, it's permanent, it's on something, does seem to matter. What do you see for the future magazines, as you have a few years into the market now?
Yeah, we're 5 years in. I think, look, the future of hot rodding and the future of this business is the guys are like 35 to 55 years old.
Right.
That's my opinion. They're still about gas and fire, as I say, gas and fire, or spark and fire, or whatever you want to say. But I think those are the guys that are going to keep this hobby going.
And the hobby's strong from your perspective. I mean, we see it. It's a younger audience, obviously. Building new cars, a lot of our customers have built their cars and show them. But the guys that are still building, you're right. They tend to be the
They've got they're the ones that have the income to do it.
Right.
And I think if you get over, I mean, my dad's 74, I think. So, you know, he's not buying anything.
Yeah.
Everything he's got, he's had it for 10 or 20 years. That's done. He doesn't have any interest in buying anything. So that younger demographic is still interested in the classic car. I think because I've been involved with some other events that catered more towards under 30.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like that audience is a lot of it's more interested in the late model stuff or the exotic stuff.
Sure.
So I think that 30, 35 and up is more interest. It still likes the classic stuff.
A little more fantasy land kind of stuff, though. I mean, they're not maybe buying product and supporting the
younger
the business. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. I don't see them participating as much. Maybe as a spectator at some of my events.
Yeah.
And hopefully starting to get into that more classic hobby. But right now, the guys that are spending money, 35 to 55, 35 to 60-ish. Yeah, for sure.
Cool.
So as far as the market, 20 years strong, I think, easily. The print side, we'll see. I think it's got another 10 years. to continue. And then after 10 years, we'll just kind of see. You know, it's the guy that's 55 now or 50 now, does he still want a magazine when he's 70? I don't know.
Yeah.
I guess we'll know by then. Who knows what kind of how we'll get our media by then.
Exactly, exactly. We'll talk about the shows because that's obviously a big part of it actually intersects with magazines, right? It fuels content and it gives you a platform to promote magazines, obviously, the shows themselves. So three shows you produce, three show series you produce. You want to give us a lay down on those?
Yeah, when I left Jags, I mean, I'm an advertising guy.
Right.
So I can do a lot of print, ads, magazines, catalogs. And when I left Jags, I met a guy out of Cincinnati that built Tri-5 Chevys. And he came to me one day and he goes, let's do a show. And as we talked about earlier, I'm a live music guy. So my whole life, I've always wanted to be that guy that was like running the lights or it's like the guy backstage that was handing out the passes. So a show to me is kind of like a concert, you know? So he said that. I said, let's do it. And none of us knew anything about shows. So I handled the marketing side of it. And he handled more of the venue and the sponsorship stuff and that type of thing. And then we did that. It was a Tri-5 National. We did that for a couple of years out of Bowling Green. And then I sold my half to him and started. I did a Camaro Firebird show for a couple of years called the F-Body Nationals and then got into trucks. And funny story, I was with my business, my ad agency, when I left Jags, I was working with Motor Trend at the time a lot with a lot of my customers doing ads in their magazines.
Sure.
And some other projects with them. And one day, one of the guys that was really is a good friend of mine, Tim Foss, he said, you know, somebody should do a truck event, really. And I was like, yeah, you're right. And if you're going to do one, the place to do it's in Texas.
Yeah.
So, you know, doing events is, it's not for the faint of heart.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can take a lot of money from a lot of people. And you can invest a lot of your own money. And do everything right. And show up. And the big man upstairs decides it's time to rain that weekend.
Yeah.
So you go home and... Ow.
We've been to Carlisle. Carlisle's hours down the road, and we go to most of those, you know, spring fall events, Hershey as well. And same thing, you know, we get rain here in Pennsylvania. I've walked around Carlisle at some muddy events, you know, you bring your mucks.
I got burned last year by a hurricane. It's the second time I've been burned by a hurricane, and it'll completely wipe you out.
Yeah.
And it's not an easy conversation to go home and have with your wife.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's a big deal. And sponsors get it and vendors get it. I mean, it's an event. They're used to, rain happens, right?
Right.
But it's tough because it's important to me that the vendors that are there are successful. There's three parts, in my opinion, of components to an event. Kind of common sense, but you got to have cars, you got to have people, mm-hmm. and you got to have vendors.
Yeah.
Because people want to buy stuff. It's pretty crazy how you have an event and a lot of people are like, who's going to be there? I want to buy. I want to carry it home.
Yeah.
Well, you can order it online and they'll ship it to you. No. I want to carry it home with me. So you got to have those three components and they all rely on each other. It's that circle. If one of them's gone, you don't have an event. So started the C10 Nationals in Texas. A couple years after that, we started one in Nashville. And I'd been trying to get out this way because I knew this was a hot spot. And Nashville Super Speedway had been closed for 10 years, been dormant.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't talk to me. And they said, well, we're going to do a NASCAR race for the first time in 10 years. And it's in June. And I said, I know, but my show would be in October. So the track would already be ready. No, we can only focus on one thing at a time. I just got in my truck and drove down there and knocked on their door. And I was like, hey, I'm the guy you've been talking to. And I want to do this. And then you show them pictures of Texas.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, okay, this guy's, he's not some ding dong who just wants to, you know, he's not kicking tires. A lot of guys, I think, you know, people don't realize it's a lot of money to put on an event at a big track like that. So, and then now since then, I'm doing one in Vegas. And then last year, 2 years ago, I had this idea that we should do what's called the Bowtie Nationals and GM Invasion.
Okay.
So I got with Chevrolet or General Motors, I should say, and they love the idea. So anybody that's familiar with the Super Chevy show from all those decades they had it, don't get it confused with the Super Chevy show. Yeah. We are not Super Chevy.
Okay.
And we do things quite a bit different than what they did, but it's the same premise. It's a car show with an autocross and the dyno and the whole deal and the vendor midway and the swap meet and heavy drag racing.
Okay.
So I think there's a market for that. And we learned last year, depends on where you live in the country, if they run eighth mile or quarter mile. I didn't know that. The truck guys, they're pretty cool. Yeah. They're pretty laid back, right? And we do some drag racing at Nashville and Texas on pit road Friday night. It's kind of more of a fun run thing. Mm-hmm. But when you're doing competitive drag racing, it's a bigger market.
Yeah.
And I've been around it, but it's taken me a little bit used to it again. But we're doing a quarter mile.
Okay.
That was based on recommendations from some of the tracks we're working with. And we're going to run with that this year and hopefully expand Bowtie Nationals maybe to an event out west or two.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the age range for the vehicles? Like, what falls under Bowtie Nationals? Any Chevy is like
Bowtie National is any
C8 Corvettes and
any yes, I mean any GM vehicle.
Okay.
I don't like in the truck world in my truck events we say full size trucks. Uh-huh. So we don't allow El Caminos. You can argue
at,
with
at
me
the
about
truck
it.
Events.
It's right. Not a truck. It's okay. A car. It's not a car chassis. But I mean, we can debate about that all day. No S10s. No HHRs, like we're full-size truck.
Okay.
And we'll let newer guys come in, even late model stuff. Although I do have a clause, no squatted trucks and no bro dozers.
Okay.
And it's
how's that go over in Texas?
You know, I don't really target that demographic. Yeah. We get some guys with late model trucks. We don't get a whole lot.
Yeah.
And there's other events that kind of cater to that market. Yeah. So I try to stay out of that realm. But I also want to know, if you want to come, you can come. But we had a guy bring a squad truck to Nashville.
He was there literally like 10 minutes and realized this is not, I'm not woke up. Not from me, but the people he was around.
This wasn't his scene.
Yeah, he's like, these guys are warming here.
Has that died down entirely at this point? And it had a moment and you kind of
I think the squad truck thing has. The brodozer thing is pretty big.
We know that.
But around here, and it's not that I don't like brodozers. It's just I have other friends that have events that have those trucks, a lot of those trucks, and it can be an issue.
Okay.
And I don't want that.
How do you do your shows differently than the other big shows that are out there already? And what makes yours unique?
I think part of it is I was never a promoter. Like I never did car shows.
Yeah.
So I came at it with a totally wide open mind. And some of the stuff... probably, whether I realized it or not, maybe I saw it in another show or I just picked up on it, you know, subconsciously maybe. But I think a lot of it is I'm a creative guy. So I think a thing is completely different a lot of times than most people and have a totally different solution sometimes than most people.
Yeah.
But the one thing I've learned about the truck market is it's a different person. Like truck people are very laid back. A lot of people that come to my shows, awards, that's not a big deal. But they're about having fun and the party.
Yeah.
And when I say party, I don't mean getting out of hand party. I mean just hanging out and having fun and seeing your buddies and it.
So that adds up, right, Adam?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and everywhere you go, there's another truck guy, and you're talking about the truck because that seems to be. I'm 48.
Yeah.
So it seems to be that generation. That's what we're doing. I think the trucks probably are popular because A, they were cheap,
were.
They're not as cheap now, but I also think that, and I'll speak for myself, but I grew up around cars my whole life and working on them and swapping motors and doing this and that, painting them, but I probably couldn't tune a carburetor. I've done it a few times, I don't remember it. And I can do some body work, but a truck, you don't have to be an expert at that. They're much easier to work on. There's a lot of room under the hood. The interior is not that difficult to mess with. Most of the parts you can just buy.
Because that holds together.
Yeah. So they're more simple to work. They're easier for us. My dad could probably do all of that other stuff. So I think that's probably, there's a few components. But we seem to be much more chill.
You don't carry over into the Bowtie Nationals and stuff, the outside of the truck world, or? Be able to pull that by
it,
into
it
that,
does
that scene.
You know, I think an interesting like what's going to be interesting over the next 10 to 20 years is these Tri-5 Chevys, the 32 Fords, even the first gen Camaros and Mustangs. As these owners pass away, what's going to happen to these cars? Because I don't know if the under 30 year old guys are going to be interested.
Yeah,
hopefully they are. You know, hopefully we do our job and get these guys to come out and get interested and feel the thunder and smell the,
the burn, but I think it's going to be up to us. It's going to be up to the guys today. They're 35 to 55. What are we going to do with these cars? Because I think they're going to get cheap. But, you know, I own two trucks and a classic Cadillac. We talked about that earlier, but I wouldn't mind owning a Tri-5 Chevy at some point. It would be my own Frankenstein version. It would be a big cam, like heavy breather, gasser version.
Yeah.
You know, something crazy. But
you think the market for those is going to get soft, though, as those owners age out?
I think at first it's going to dip.
Yeah.
And then I think there'll be some renewed excitement from the guys my age that are like, oh, yeah, those are kind of cool cars. Yeah.
For me, it's hard to envision a time when like a first gen Camaro isn't desirable, but it could come.
Right.
I mean,
right. So I'm a tall guy, so I got to be careful what I pick.
As a showrunner, what do you consider like a hallmark of a good show?
When two things, I would say probably three things, three solid things. Your vendors and sponsors talk good about you. They say, we do really well there. Two would be people talk good about you on social media.
Okay.
You know, social media, my goal in life is to throw my phone in the garbage and buy a flip phone. Yeah. That can be done with, but it's such a key component. If you own a business, you have to be part of it. So people talk good about the show on social media. You know, they saw, that was a great show. I was there. I can't wait to come back. And I think the third component is people say that to your face.
Yeah.
I mean, at most of my truck events anyways, we do a track cruise on the track after the award Saturday, the event's over. People go out and cruise the track, then load up and go home or just drive home. I spend 2 to 3 hours out there and I shake everybody's hand and thank them for coming. And I think that's important.
Yeah.
And we've had 6 marriage proposals at my events, a baby announcement.
Yeah.
So I think that says a lot about a successful event, but the vendors backing you and the people coming backing you and growth. I mean, if you have growth, it's working.
Yeah.
Right.
And you're seeing growth in all three of the events. Right. Yeah.
And I think the other thing that people don't talk about is, how would I say this? The Xeroxing effect. So if you have a good idea, so somebody takes your idea and copies it.
Is there something you've done that you've seen copied elsewhere?
I've seen other events that have been in business decades that have started to copy maybe what I'm doing, but probably some other guys too.
Yeah.
You know, my wife always goes, well, you know, you should be flattered. Yeah. I'm flattered for about a minute. And then I'm like, oh, why, you know,
yeah.
Don't do everything I do, but they're saying that it's working.
Yeah.
It's, you know, just coming to a car show or truck show and sitting in a lawn chair.
Mm-hmm.
Those days are dead.
Yeah. I was going to ask about that because it seemed like the general kind of car show format feels a little stale. I mean, I think it's good to see the cars in motion, to hear them, you know, and not just revving them up in a parking space, but to see them in action and to, you know, see them live. But
I think you hear a lot about lifestyle events.
Yeah.
You know, we hear a lot about these sponsors or these other promoters. Oh, we want to do a lifestyle event. What does that mean exactly? It could mean a lot of things. It
depends. Lifestyle is the most overused, unused,
yes,
properly used term because I would agree. It's so subject to interpretation.
Some of the shows I've been to where there's a younger demographic, I helped these guys kind of behind the scenes for a couple of years at Streetcar Takeover. A lot of their events, there was music. There was other activities going on that were for the younger demographic.
Yeah.
In my events, it's more about interactive. So you register your truck or car. Yes, you're in the show. You know, whether you want to be judged or not, you're going to be judged. Your vehicle. And
important distinction.
Right. And but we also include, so we have the autocross. And we have ride along. So if you're not comfortable with your truck, if you're like, oh, I don't think this thing is going to make it through an autocross.
Sure.
Then hop in a truck with a guy that's it's a pro truck and a pro driver, and you can't wipe the smile off your face. And so, you know, you go home.
Yeah.
But we also include, we have a dyno. We don't charge you for the dyno. We're charging for the autocross. We don't charge you for drag racing on Friday night. If you want to drag race,
so you're actually
part of the triggers. Covers everything. We, you know, the Bowtie Nationals with the drag racing component, that's a separate deal at the Bowtie shows. But everything else at a Bowtie show or the C10 Nationals is included in the registration.
Yeah.
It has to be interactive. People want to be entertained. And that's just, I think part of it is the world we live in, but I also think part of it is our phones.
Sure.
You know, our attention span is pretty short. So you've got to have something going on at all times to keep people interested. And I think that 2 days is enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Friday is exciting. You kind of get the vibe. Saturday, we have other things going on Saturday. We have a burnout contest and that type of thing. And give people time to get home.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm not dragging this thing out into Sunday.
Right.
I don't want to go home Sunday night or Monday morning. I'm going to get home someday.
We've seen the evolution of that in the locals. And a lot of the Carlisle events have basically, you know, Sunday is not really a factor anymore. It's in some of them. And it does start earlier in the week for those that can arrive earlier. But yeah, it's a day or two is a lot, especially if you travel from outside the area.
Keep it in touch with people that are coming to your event, having conversations with them. You know, we show up. I have a partner, a business partner, Ken, on the events. Ken kind of runs the behind the scenes stuff. Like as soon as we get there, I open the trailer door. The banners are, we have staff, great staff. They know how to stagger our banners, how to hang the banners, how to set up merchandise, how to lay out the vendor midway. I am heavily involved in the vendor layout because I kind of know the behind the scenes deals that I've done.
Sure.
Ken doesn't necessarily know that. But when we show up, he runs the radios. He does all the behind the scenes. If there's an issue, it goes to Ken. I don't even have a radio. If he has to get a hold of me, he'll call me.
Yeah.
But my job really is to be in that face, visiting the sponsors, asking how things are going. How, you know, are you doing well today? Going out and mingling with the truck people or the car people and really getting to know what they want and what they're happy with and what they're not happy with. I think some bigger events, they either don't have the time or they just don't care.
Yeah.
And to me, that's part of the success.
How many people does it take to put on your show? How big is your staff to do a typical show?
Typically 14 to 18 people.
Okay.
Depends on which event and where we're at.
Count on local volunteers at all for anything, or you do it all professional?
No. So one of the things that we really hear a lot is people that come, they'll say, your staff was awesome. And it begins with really the phone.
Yeah.
You know, I have one gal that I've known for a long time, Brooke, that answers our phone for the magazine and the shows. And she has the answer.
Yeah.
If they call, she's got the answer. It's not somebody that's got to call her or call somebody else. And then, and so our staff is a core. Ken has a business in Texas and I have my business in Ohio. And so I'll bring family typically and Brooke. And then Ken brings his staff and some family. And so it's typically the same people and it has been for years. So they know the expectations. They know we're going to hold them accountable, but it's more about they know the event.
Sure.
They were there when we set it up. They know where things are at. They know the answers to questions.
You have consistency.
And when you rely on volunteers that are paid, a lot of times they don't show up.
Yeah.
They're in a grumpy mood. They could care less.
Yeah.
You know, they're more worried about what's on Instagram, or it's staff that the track has hired. And you just don't get a good, let's say, customer interaction a lot of times with those.
Yeah.
So it's important for us to have the same people.
I know before we got rolling, you also mentioned you don't like to do midsummer shows. Or have generally not.
Well, I mean, I don't like to go to a show and be hot.
Yeah.
It's miserable. So I like to do my shows so pretty much from April, May are the 2 months I'm a fan of. Early June, you're pretty safe.
Yeah.
It can be hot.
Yeah.
But early June's good. And then you get into Father's Day and or Mother's Day or whatever it is in there. And then you get to graduations and all that stuff. So I stay away from holidays. I stay away from, and then I do September, October, because it's great weather.
Yeah.
The only thing you have to worry about in those months is hurricanes.
Sure. So your Texas events, anything go over the winter down south, or do you just
kind of? No, in the winter, if you mainly prep, yeah. You know, renewing sponsorships and renewing fresh on the website and getting stuff ready. A lot of it's sponsorship stuff. You know, people make decisions usually from SEMA. You talk to them, and then you might see some of them at PRI, and then by by the end of the year or shortly the year after, you already know what's going on.
Sure.
But you've got like with my dual General Motors, I'm talking to them in August.
Sure. Yeah, you have to.
Because their budgets are all, they're looking out a little bit ahead. So winter months are prepping. Then you bookend that with events in the fall, events in the late spring, early summer, and then summertime. Yeah, I don't do events.
Yeah.
I go do other stuff.
Do you go to other people's events at all? Just to
check
them out? Okay.
Yeah. Most of the truck shows that we cover in the book, I've been to most of them.
Yeah.
At least once.
What's your schedule look like for 2025? We're in mid-February right now. We record this. So when do you get going and what's your schedule looking like?
For my events,
yeah,
it'll be late March. We're in Vegas. So that's their first C10 event.
Okay.
That was originally our Salt Lake show in June. So we moved it.
Okay.
We're not doing Salt Lake. We're going to go to Vegas. And then a month later, we're in Beach Bend. So we're doing Bowtie there.
Okay.
And then I do Texas for C10. And then we're in Norwalk at Summit Motorsports Park for Bowtie. And then I do another event, wasn't on the list, but C10 Shindig.
Okay.
That's in Kansas City. I've done that for a few years. And then that's early June. And then I'm off for a few months. And then I do a small event back home in Ohio called C10 Breakout. And then we go to Indy.
Okay.
We do Bowtie Nationals in September. At the drag strip.
Drag strip, okay.
And then a couple weeks later, I'm in Nashville, C10 Nationals. And then a couple weeks after that, I'm in Atlanta. This is a new event called Truck Fest.
Okay.
So that's all trucks, all makes, all models. So the S10s are allowed.
Squat. Brodozer.
We say no brodozers and no squats.
Okay.
But who knows? I mean, look, I want to have a safe, fun event. And I don't want any riffraff, as my dad would call it there. So we just want to have fun. And so far, we've been able to do that.
Where can people find the schedule and find more about the magazines?
The magazines, it's cktruckmag.com.
Okay.
And GMC is gmcmag.com.
Okay.
And then C10 Nationals is c10nationals.com, bowtienationals.com, c10shindig.com.
Okay.
And truck-fest.com. So I just like the magazines, when I do events, before I even pick a name, I make sure the URL is available, the social media handles are available. I immediately trademark everything, and so that it just all makes sense. Try to make it easy.
We'll post all those in the show notes and everything. Before I let you go, as a GM guy, got to ask, Super Bowl halftime show, GNX, dancing on the hood of a GNX. We ran a story yesterday. We know it wasn't a real GNX, but it probably was perhaps a real Grand National, or, you know, it's a prop, it's a stage prop, right. But people lost their minds. What are your thoughts on that, regardless of the performance or what you think of the music?
That's hilarious. So I was watching it with my wife, and as soon as it happened, let me back up. I leave my phone on top of the fridge.
Mm-hmm.
When I come in, I have an office at home that's outside the house. Another separate building. So when I come in every day, I leave my phone on top of the fridge so I don't get bothered.
Mm-hmm.
I eat dinner and it stays up there the rest of the night. Well, during the Super Bowl, I hadn't looked at the phone in like 4 days because I was on a trip.
Yeah.
So we're watching the Super Bowl. That comes out and I said, I got to go get my phone. I said, because people are going to lose their minds.
Yeah.
So I get on there and I immediately see like Holly and a couple other big guys were making posts about it immediately.
Yeah.
And I am really good friends with and have done a lot of work since I left Jags with Golden Star. And I know Paul, the owner. And I text Paul. And I said, Paul, you need right now to put a post that says we have hoods for the Buick car. And he was like, great idea. Thanks. He immediately posts it. He has over 1,000 shares and 500 likes within 24 hours.
Yeah.
And for him, that's a ton, right? So it worked out really well. I immediately went business.
Yeah.
Like, how can we make this profitable for somebody? And he was the guy I thought of. So I just went, people are going to lose their mind.
I mean, in theory, you could have effectively built a Grand National look out of off-the-shelf parts. Never were assembled as a
somebody car. Said it was cloned.
Yeah.
I mean, and they had they had like 30 or 40 people come out of the trunk.
Yeah, and
they
out of the stage.
Obviously, yeah. There was no floor in it or whatever. No.
You could see a band around the center. I mean, that's a stage prop. But I think it's a good move, a moment for the GNX and the Grand National.
I think it's a good move. I think it's good for our classic car community that they decided to put that on the stage because they thought that somebody in the audience would think it was cool.
Yeah.
So that muscle cars and trucks are still cool. That's great to hear. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing. It's been an interesting week. I mean, all of us here, you know, kind of had the same expectations. A lot of people losing their minds over that. So, yeah. Anything else you'd like to share? I really appreciate you coming by. Look forward to seeing future issues of the magazine, and maybe we can get out to one of your shows this year. I know Adam's big C10 guy, our producer here. So maybe you've got some vacation time coming up or something you can use.
It sounds like everywhere I go, I always meet somebody that's got some kind of truck.
Yeah.
And there's always that connection.
Yeah.
I mean, me being here today was kind of by circumstance or just by chance, I guess. But it worked. I think it's going to work out.
Yeah. I'm glad you stopped in for sure.
And we're come on that later, but you guys have a nice place here. And I think what you guys are doing with your line of products, it's helping the hobby because it's putting the right tools in the right products in the guy's hand.
Right.
That's trying to do it himself. And there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah. That's our roots. I mean, we DIY auto restoration was really the genesis of Eastwood 46, 47 years ago, whatever it is now. So yeah, I think we're still true to that.
There's more guys now that are paying people to do stuff. I'm guilty of it.
Sure.
I got my 50s in a, I don't, but my problem is I don't have the time.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to get the truck done so that my parents can ride in it before they can't, you know?
Yeah.
And so some guys are in that position where they don't have the time, but they've got the money. Not that I have the money, but what you guys are doing is where the majority of the market is, which is the guy that, whether he buys that quarter and wants to weld it on himself, you know, you guys were taking me through on a tour. And I think a big part of what you offer is what you guys said, we'll sell him the welder, but we'll also sell him the wire and the grinder. We'll sell him everything so he doesn't forget and go, oh, I didn't know I needed that.
Yeah.
Or if he's fabricating a piece to put in there and he's not using a new piece, like this thing you got sitting over here, I don't think there's anything you can buy for that. So
very little.
It's an important part of the restoration world. What the service that you guys are providing by the products and your staff. I think that's a big deal.
We appreciate that.
And then I appreciate you guys, inviting me on.
Our pleasure.
I hope it was interesting for everybody.
I have to have you back.